excited you joined us here in today's lesson of the new science of physical health and the Outsmart Classroom. We're going to work on solving two problems that sound almost identical, but they're not. The biggest public health crisis of the 21st century and the biggest public health problem of the 21st century. Let's get started on how to figure that out in today's lesson right now. Welcome back to part two of this lesson called The Algorithm. Thank you so much for joining me. I had such an overwhelming response to part one. I wasn't even going to have, I hadn't created a script, a concept, or an idea for part two of this lesson about the algorithm. Now, by the way, if you have not listened to part one of the lesson, go back and do that. It'll give you all the perspective you need from where we're going to pick up on right here. So here's the first question. What caused me or prompted me to come up with this concept for part two of the algorithm? Because I felt like at the time of creating the first part of the lesson that I'd pretty much done a decent job with that, and I'd covered the aspects that I'd wanted to, so that you could understand, every the listener that we've got in all at the time of recording this lesson, going out to 91 different countries and thousands of different cities around the world. I'm always overwhelmed and so appreciative of the community that have joined us. But I don't really want to create lessons just for the sake of it. I have always an important key critical concept to deliver in each single lesson. Here's what prompted me, and I couldn't get this out of my mind, and here's what it was. I began having a discussion with someone who's in my profession. So those of you who've never caught up with my background, for 37 years, hard to say now, long time, I've been qualified and studying as a health and physical education teacher here in Australia at universities and teaching in Australian schools across the country, and giving lectures and speaking all over Australia and New Zealand about this topic that I'm obsessed with. How do I get people to solve two problems? Solving the biggest public health crisis of the 21st century for them and the people they care about and the community that they're a part of, and solving the biggest public health problem of the 21st century for the people they care about and the community that they're a part of. Interestingly enough, you heard the two emphasis words there. The biggest public health problem of the 21st century, the second one, and the biggest public health crisis of the 21st century. I'm not going to go into what those differences are here. That's not for this particular lesson. But what is for this lesson is this conversation that I was having with a person in their early 20s talking about my father's sudden death. So all these years ago, when I was 23 years of age, in 1989, I got a phone call from my mother at 3:30 p.m. in the afternoon, November the 1st. And she opened with three words: "Love has died." And my father had passed away from a sudden, catastrophic, unexpected, no-symptom heart attack. But my mother and he were looking at buying a new house. My mum was 45, 11 years younger than I am right now. And my father, standing next to my mother, collapsed to the ground, and they called an ambulance, tried to resuscitate him, and he was never revived. He passed away on the spot from this sudden heart attack. This person that I'm talking to, young person, early 20s, in my profession, just finished university, a few years out in the teaching profession, asked me this question, which was the total catalyst for today's lesson and a few subsequent lessons that are going to happen as a result. Here's the one simple question that person asked: was it genetics that caused your father's death? I took a big breath because I felt like saying, how do you not know this? You're in my profession. But then it made me realize this continuation from generation to generation to generation of people that don't understand molecular and physiological health adaptations that happen, particularly as a result of what we call the correct dose of physical activity. In fact, the term, the phrase, that the statement I just made, the molecular and physiological health adaptations. That statement is not a part of the lexicon. Well, that means it's not a part of everyday language. You and I, with our friends, no matter where you are in the world, we don't talk about molecular and physiological health adaptations as a result of the correct dose of physical activity that drive down your clinical risk of obesity, catastrophic cardiovascular events, diabetes, and metabolic disease. We don't talk about that. That's what I'm obsessed with getting people to talk about and understand. And so I decided to come up with, well, not decided, my mind immediately, it took me an instant to develop today's lesson because I knew what the importance of it was. If this person I'm talking to has just been to university, starting out in my career, has no concept that a catastrophic, sudden, massive cardiovascular event like my father's heart attack is almost certainly not genetics. It's certainly to do with the long-term development of precursor conditions inside the human body that are self-caused. They're not caused because you were born that way. In most people, the overwhelming majority of people are like my father. They have no earthly idea of the algorithm, the use of the algorithm, and the impact the algorithm can have in having them avoid a catastrophic cardiovascular event or complications from obesity, which could lead to catastrophic cardiovascular event, or complications from diabetes, which could lead to catastrophic cardiovascular event, or complications from metabolic disease or syndrome, which could lead to a catastrophic cardiovascular event. All roads lead to Rome. In case you didn't know, the number one cause of sickness, disease, and premature death in men and women worldwide, 18 million people this year will pass away around the world from a cardiovascular event, heart attack or stroke or something similar. And there's some other variations of those things, which I won't go into right now. Another 18 million people, that's 36 million altogether, will have a cardiovascular event and survive temporarily. It's by far and away, by a long way, the number one cause of sickness, disease, and premature death. Coming in at second place with about 8 million are cancer events. So, not onto that, but onto it's not genetics that caused my father's heart attack. It's not genetics that is preparing the next generation who right now in their 20s are developing precursor conditions. Let me walk you through now part two of the algorithm, this lesson called the algorithm. In lesson number one, I discussed the concept of health adaptation and changes that happen inside your body if you use the algorithm created by this team of PhDs who are exercise physiologists and cardiologists from Norway, particularly led by one person, Professor Ulrich Wisloff. If you have not had the opportunity to get to that lesson, here's a refresher of what I mean by the algorithm. And this is perhaps a better explanation than I gave in the first lesson. It's an evidence-based, clinically validated formula that converts all of your planned and unplanned physical activity into a score of what are called health impact points. You earn health impact points every time your heart rate increases. The higher heart rate, the faster you can earn health impact points. Clinical research over a period of more than 40 years shows that those who achieve 100 health impact points or more every week over time live on an average of 8 to 10 years longer than others who don't, and they live more healthfully. Just a quick sidebar, though, because I keep saying this throughout my lessons, I keep using the term clinically validated, which I just used in the opening part of that statement. It's the algorithm's an evidence-based, in brackets, clinically validated formula. So what does that mean, clinically validated? When research like the health impact points from the algorithm has been clinically validated, it means the results of the research have been reviewed and confirmed by qualified PhDs and peer-reviewed by PhDs around the world or researchers through rigorous scientific testing and analysis. Clinical validation typically involves conducting studies on a large group of people to assess the safety, efficacy, and reliability of a particular product, technology, or intervention. The study participants typically chosen based on a certain criteria, such as age and gender and health status and so on, or specific medical conditions, and followed over a period of time to collect data and assess the outcomes. Remember, the algorithm, the formula, that was done over 40 years, the data from that. If the results of the study show that the intervention is safe, effective, and reliable for its intended use, it can be considered clinically validated. It means the product or intervention, in this case, the algorithm, the formula, that's converted into some software, has met the standards required to be recommended by peer-reviewed professionals, PhDs, and they are made available to the public. In the case of the health impact points that are used with the algorithm, clinical validation refers to studies that have assessed the efficacy of the algorithm for tracking physical activity, planned or unplanned. Unplanned is things like going, walking the dog, gardening, walking up a hill, running to a bus stop for a short period of time, those things. The algorithm has been assessed for its efficacy for tracking physical activity, planned and unplanned, and predicting health outcomes. Very interesting. The results of these studies have been reviewed and confirmed by peer-reviewed journals from around the world to determine that the algorithm is safe, effective, and reliable for use in predicting health outcomes. That is brilliant. So let's do this in the rest of this lesson. And there will be an algorithm part three, by the way, and you'll see why in just a moment. Let's look at some negative molecular and physiological health adaptations that are occurring in millions and millions of people today, just like they were in my father all those years ago. It's like a fork in the road. I'm trying to explain this the right way so it makes a logical sense here. The negative molecular and physiological health adaptations that are occurring in these millions and millions of people today, just like they did in my father decades ago, they are happening regularly and they grow with most people without knowing it. And it happens, this fork in the road, when you hit your early 20s. Your body begins to change. So between your 20th year of your life and the 30th year of your life, there's significant changes in aging. Doesn't look like it necessarily on the outside, but there are certainly on the inside. And a fork in the road. Those people that have never used the algorithm or got close to using the level of physical activity that the algorithm has calculated, those people end up beginning in their 20s, without them knowing, developing internal, very damaging and very negative molecular and physiological health adaptations. See, what these adaptations do, the negative ones, is they produce what I call the rainbow effect. You don't get to the pot of gold until you reach the end of the rainbow. That's what the rainbow effect is. In this case, the end of the rainbow can be in your 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s and beyond, where enough time has elapsed in your life and the law of accumulation all of a sudden becomes catastrophic enough to threaten your life or make you permanently sick. So the negative health adaptations have accumulated through your 20s, without you knowing, through your 30s, without you knowing, through your 40s, without you knowing, maybe through your 50s, like where I am right now, without people knowing. And all of a sudden, it becomes catastrophic, threatens your very life. Or the example for me was my father passing away all those years ago when he had zero warning in the months and years leading up to his death at a ridiculously young age. Back then, he didn't know about the negative molecular and physiological health adaptations growing inside his body that would lead to his catastrophic cardiovascular event causing his sudden death. But guess what? When I talked to this young person in my profession, I knew they didn't know either. And I'm sitting there going, hang on a second. My father didn't know because no one ever taught him. That's why I built the Outsmart Classroom, by the way. There's a link to that in the show notes because I wanted to teach people around the world why I deliver this lesson. So here's the thing. If this person who was a young teacher, a brand new beginning person in the subject I'm obsessed about, health and physical education, if they don't know, then that means that the generation of people, if that's a typical person, which very much is, very bright person this person is, if they don't know, then that means the teachers of the next generation, if they're similar, almost all of them are, because they go through the same university courses, then they're not going to teach the next generation. So people are going to come out of school in one generation, out of school another generation, out of school another generation. So you, as a school teacher, I might teach over my career 3, 4, 5 generations. But this young person, they're going to add on to my 3, 4, 5 generations, and they're going to be 10. And they don't know, and neither are the people they're going to teach. So we're going to perpetuate the same problem. I got to stop that. I got to stop it. So that's what I'm obsessed with, stopping it. My father developed negative molecular and physiological health adaptations through most of his 20s, if not all of them. Maybe some of the professors I've spoken with have said it begins in your late teenage years. So they have developed it in their 20s, throughout their 30s, throughout their 40s, throughout their 50s. My father didn't even get to his 50s. So let me walk you through what some of these negative adaptations were that he would have developed. At the end of each one of these negative adaptations, I'll then walk you through how using the algorithm would have changed his risk of sudden death, and the risk for anyone, because 100% of people who use it get the same positive molecular and physiological health adaptations. Right. So here's the first negative one that could very well be happening to you or the people you care about most in this world or the community you're a part of. It's highly likely this is happening to you if you are not using the algorithm. And I'll bet you a cup of coffee and a biscuit at a cafe or a meal and a night out that you've never heard about this one before. It's not a part of the lexicon. This, what I'm about to mention to you and run you through in this lesson, is not something people know about. Here's the title: cardiac fibrosis. Remember, after I finish walking you through what this is, I'll show you explicitly how using the algorithm can drive down your risk of developing cardiac fibrosis. This particular condition, negative molecular and physiological health adaptation that you almost certainly have never heard of. It refers to the buildup. This is what it is: a buildup of excess fibrous tissue called collagen in the heart muscle, the wall of the heart muscle. It can lead to stiffening and thickening of the heart muscle, and it is a common pathological feature of many heart diseases, including heart failure, including heart attack, and including hypertension, high blood pressure. So if you want to understand it in basic terms, this is how I like to describe it so you can get a picture in your head. Have you ever seen concrete poured anywhere? I remember being about, how old was I? Probably 8 years old when a brand new shopping center in the city that I lived in from the time I was born to the time I was 8 was being poured, this brand new shopping center, which still exists there today. I've been back to it all these years later. But I saw the foundations being poured. Concrete, my dad and took myself and my twin brother to watch it. I still remember the day we were watching this concrete being poured of this massive new complex being built in this suburb where we lived in a city here in Australia, the city of Melbourne, Australia. And I remember standing there with my dad. My dad was talking about what was happening. It was pretty fascinating for us young boys. And watching concrete be poured across steel mesh. Mesh is laid on top of each other. Concrete's poured, they smooth it out. More mesh is laid on top of each other. Concrete's poured, they smooth it out. And they do like a whole, like, look like a couple of kilometers, couple of miles of concrete being poured. Cardiac fibrosis is like a collagen mesh, just like concrete mesh, but it's inside the wall of your heart. The reason they put mesh in concrete is to stop it from moving, to make it inflexible. That's what cardiac fibrosis does to your heart over time, the law of accumulation. Now, here's the most fascinating thing. If you get this developing inside your heart wall, what do you think it does to the heart wall? Makes it less movable, more stiff, more thick. That is the opposite of what you want to have happen if you want to learn to live longer, if you want to be at low risk of sickness, disease, and premature death. You do not want cardiac fibrosis, but it's very common, but it's very unknown. The development of cardiac fibrosis is really complex, and it involves activation of various cells including these things called cardiac fibroblasts. Immune cells are something called myocytes. They produce and deposit excess collagen, too much collagen, in the heart tissue. Results in the formation of scar tissue, which then interferes with the normal functioning of the heart, leading to an impaired ability to contract and then relax, which is what the heart does. Contracts, pumps out blood, then relaxes. Contracts, pumps out blood, then relaxes. This decreases two really important things. Cardiac output, the amount of blood that can get pumped out, and it reduces the blood flow to the body. That is dangerous, both those things, because it leads to various complications, including arrhythmias, so abnormal heart rhythms, because your heart's not pumping properly because it's got this mesh in there, heart failure, and sudden cardiac death, sudden heart attack. Additionally, the accumulation of fibrotic tissue increases the workload on the heart. It makes it harder, it makes your heart to work harder, to pump harder, leading to further damage, further deterioration of the heart muscle over time, between your 40th year and your 50th year, and 30th year and your 40th year. Listen to this. There are currently no known cures for cardiac fibrosis, but various treatments can include medications and lifestyle changes. This is phenomenal. I actually didn't know this, so I did a bit of research. In severe cases, surgery or transplantation is the only thing that can stop the progression of the disease. A heart transplant. Cardiac fibrosis is terrible. Listen to the pathology of it, how it works. Right? The progression and pathology of cardiac fibrosis varies depending on underlying causes of an individual's overall health status. If you don't use the algorithm in your daily life, you are going to be at risk of developing cardiac fibrosis, because you'll see in a minute how using the algorithm turns this around. So here's a general overview of the typical progression and pathology of it. You have a triggering event triggered by various factors, including chronic inflammation. What do you think the algorithm does? Use it properly in your life, reduces inflammation. What else can cause is the triggering event? High blood pressure causes cardiac fibrosis, helps to contribute to it. What do you think using the algorithm does? Decreases high blood pressure. That's another lesson. Diabetes is a triggering event for cardiac fibrosis. What do you think using the algorithm does? Decreases your risk of having complications from diabetes and sometimes genetic factors, but particularly chronic inflammation, hypertension, and diabetes. Fibroblast activation. Fibroblast cells produce this extracellular matrix proteins, including collagen, which make up the fibrous tissue in response to the triggering event. So you get this fibroblast activation. So you could be getting this in your 20s. You can get high blood pressure in your 20s. And fibroblasts in the heart are activated and begin producing excess collagen and other extracellular matrix proteins. Early stage of that is excess fibrous tissue is limited to small areas of the heart and may not significantly impair heart function. It means you can't feel it, you can't see it. At this stage, symptoms not noticeable, and diagnosis may require image testing. So people in their 20s aren't getting image testing for this in the early stages, and that's the problem. What does the algorithm do? Helps prevent what we've just talked about. Intermediate stage, as cardiac fibrosis progresses, fibrous tissue spreads, becomes more dense, leading to more stiffening of the heart muscle that can't be repaired. This can impair the heart's ability to fill with blood and pump effectively, leading to fatigue, shortness of breath, and swelling in the legs and ankles. Late stage, in advanced stages of cardiac fibrosis, the heart muscle becomes so stiff and damaged, it can't function properly. Leads to heart failure. I mean, it's just your heart stops. At this stage, symptoms are so severe, hospitalization, medication, and even a transplant to manage. So here's the question as we wrap up this lesson, because this lesson's not going to be overly long. How does using the algorithm help prevent or drive down your risk significantly of cardiac fibrosis? So there's several possible pathways in which using the correct dose of physical activity, that means using the algorithm, might help to reduce the buildup of fibrous tissue in the heart. Number one, reduction in oxidative stress. Using the algorithm through physical activity, the correct dose, has been shown to reduce this thing called oxidative stress. That's a process that can damage cells and tissues in the body. Oxidative stress can contribute to the development of cardiac fibrosis by stimulating the production of collagen and these other things that I mentioned, extracellular matrix proteins in the heart. By reducing oxidative stress through the correct dose of physical activity, you can only find that out with the algorithm, it may help to reduce the production of these proteins. So you reduce oxidative stress, you reduce the production of these proteins. That's part one of driving down the clinical risk of cardiac fibrosis. Anti-inflammatory effects. The correct dose of physical activity using the algorithm has been shown to have anti-inflammatory effects on the human body. Chronic inflammation is known to contribute to the development of cardiac fibrosis by promoting production of collagen and extracellular matrix proteins, which I keep talking about. By reducing the inflammation, you help reduce the buildup of fibrous tissue in the heart. The stimulation of cellular signaling pathways. So the correct dose of physical activity by using the algorithm stimulates various cellular pathways in the body, inducing the production of growth factors and hormones. Some of these pathways, signaling pathways they're called, have been shown to promote the regeneration of heart muscle cells and the remodeling, this is so interesting, the remodeling of heart tissue, which may help prevent the development of fibrosis. Improved blood flow and oxygen delivery. Physical activity, the correct dose, using the algorithm, can also improve blood flow and oxygen delivery to the heart. That reduces the workload on the heart and prevent the development of fibrosis, which can occur as a result of chronic stress on the heart muscle. So there you go. Here's my father all these years ago. It wasn't a genetic malfunction that caused his sudden catastrophic cardiovascular event. Of the 18 million people this year around the world that are going to have one and pass away, the overwhelming majority of those people have got potentially cardiac fibrosis or a part of cardiac fibrosis contributing to that heart attack. If you use the algorithm, I'll just walk through four molecular and physiological positive health adaptations that happen. You cannot know if you're developing, this is the critical thing, you cannot know if you're developing positive molecular and physiological health adaptations without the algorithm. It's inside the Outsmart Classroom. I walk you through it. I think I've even got a link here in the lesson notes if you go and have a look to a web page dedicated to the algorithm. You're going to have a look at that. Let me wrap up this lesson. I have got more molecular and physiological health adaptations to walk through, but one's enough. You want to go back and replay the whole idea of cardiac fibrosis, the use of the algorithm, and the four different reasons that using the algorithm helps to drive down your clinical risk. Remember, we learned what clinical validation was at the start of this lesson, and you want to get that embedded into the lexicon. How do I avoid cardiac fibrosis? I use the algorithm. That's what I do. I earn health impact points. That's what I do. So finish this off by introducing the part three of the lesson coming up soon. Endothelial dysfunction. Is that a part of your lexicon? Is that a phraseology that you use in your daily life? I guess it's not. A cup of coffee and a biscuit or a night out at a dinner at a restaurant, I'll bet you, you probably don't know what endothelial dysfunction is. You can look it up. But here's the thing we're going to do in the next lesson. I'm going to break down the pathology of it for you so you don't have to go and look it up in the lesson. And we're going to show you what does using the algorithm do at a molecular and physiological level that is positive at a positive level by using the algorithm to decrease your clinical risk of ever developing endothelial dysfunction. And let me tell you, cardiac fibrosis is bad. Endothelial dysfunction is even worse. The one after that in part four, which is going to be about end-stage organ failure. Horrendous. I interviewed the chief medical officer for prevention from the esteemed American Heart Association. In part four, you're going to hear from him. He's one of the world's most renowned public health specialists from Dallas, Texas, Dr. Eduardo Sanchez. Great guy. Lovely human being. He's going to talk a little bit about end-stage organ failure. You're going to hear from this doctor, this professor, in his own words, PhD of medicine and public health, in his own words about something that's catastrophic. Once again, the use of the algorithm, that's the thing. Because I've developed these really cool T-shirts around some of the key concepts inside the Outsmart Classroom. And one of them, I've developed this very cool symbol, and the word at the top of it is the algorithm, and there's a heartbeat line in the middle of the circle. It's on a black T-shirt. I'm really happy with the result of it, and I'm going to start making them for myself. Obviously, anybody else who wants to get them can, but I really want to embed this concept in people's minds. I am obsessed with showing you visually through words here, through my T-shirts, and through my Outsmart Classroom, where there's video of these things, like cardiac fibrosis, endothelial dysfunction. There's video content. I'm going to show you until you get to the point where it's like me. I can rattle off the things from the first lesson, arteriogenesis and angiogenesis, and I know what it looks like in my mind. But my task is to help you to outsmart sickness, disease, and premature death, to help solve two problems: the biggest public health crisis of the 21st century and the biggest public health problem of the 21st century. Let's keep doing that together in the next lesson, part three of the algorithm. And we're going to talk about and have a lesson, teaching lesson on endothelial dysfunction. Thanks for joining me, everybody. Bye for now.